Welcome back to Compliments to the Chef. I'm your host, Nancy.
And I'm your host, Bits.
And we are at episode 5 of Top Chef Destination Canada.
Canada. fun app, Nancy.
This was a fun app, but before I forget, did we have any leftovers from last app?
We have maybe not a leftover, but a look forward.
Oh.
Just a shout out for our second helping this Monday. We will have guest judge, Top Chef twice finalist, Top Chef World Chef All-Star, Top Bar, All-Star.
London.
Sarah Bradley is coming on the pod. Yeah, we're super excited. I don't know if we've like stated this explicitly, but when Nancy and I started this pod, this sort of Skunkworks name we referred to this as was the road to Paducah. It has always been our aspiration to go to Sarah's restaurant in Paducah, Kentucky. Yes. 2024. What year is it? 2025. Maybe the year.
We really want to try to do it this year, but who knows?
But Paducah's coming to us.
Paducah's coming to us.
It's going to be really fun.
This is a real manifestation moment for the two of us. So please forgive us for the amount of fangirling we'll probably do in front of Sarah. But also tune in because it's going to be a great interview. You don't want to miss it.
Yes. And we can ask her about today's episode. So without further ado, I don't think we have any leftovers.
Let's begin.
All right, Nancy, Amuse-Bouche Reactions, episode 5.
I had a few sort of big feelings about this episode.
Mm-hmm.
The first, I didn't mind that there was no quick fire. I know that's like of note, but I didn't mind. My overarching feeling about this episode is like this cast has a lot of charisma, like particularly
yes.
with each other. I would have been happy with any pairing of two chefs.
Yes. And I'm excited for us to just pick that apart,
yes.
even though you feel that way, and just, you know, reassemble all possible combinations once we get into it.
Yes.
But I had the exact same thought. It is this group's got Riz.
Yes. We might, I mean, Joe Flam, watch out.
Yo.
These people are coming for you.
The Riz Senate.
The Riz Council, we'll see you now.
The Riz Council.
It was just fun. I love a partner challenge. The other thing I'll say, which I have been saying this for a while now, I've been itching for a large format challenge. So I was happy to see this. And, you know, it just, I am consistently so satisfied about the quality of food coming out this season.
Uh-huh. Yep. 1,000%. I don't have anything to add.
Yeah, let's dive into it.
I would say that was my takeaways. This was fun. We open the episode. Kristen comes into the stew room right after elimination happens, and she gives Kristen and Gail, and gives the chefs a sort of overview of the different neighborhoods of Toronto and how mm-hmm. it's really a melting pot for a lot of different cuisines. And long story short, the chefs are going to be spending some time in those neighborhoods to stage at restaurants. She comes in with a big knife block, and we see folks draw knives. So we, just to kind of run down the cuisines covered, we have Greek, Thai, Filipino, Portuguese, Indian, and Caribbean. And it's just a good old-fashioned knife draw.
Oh, my favorite. But there is something of note in this knife draw, which is Tristan, who won the challenge, gets to draw his knife first. And he is told that the winner of Last Chance Kitchen will come back and be his partner for this challenge. And not only that, but also the winner of Last Chance Kitchen also has immunity this episode. So they're just like sitting pretty.
Ooh,
going
yes.
into this. That must have been Tristan's best night of sleep the entire competition.
100%. And I thought to myself too when that was, you know, when that was all clicking in my head. I remember if it was last season I think it was last season where there was that uneven moment and then the one person just like didn't have to go home because of that. There was some like weirdness where mm-hmm. somebody was spared because of the way that the numbers worked. And I thought in that moment, I was like, wow, this is just so beautiful the way that these rules work this season. Because, yeah, it's she got it of her own hard work, and so did he. And
maybe that solves the mystery of why the mid-season finale was so soon into the season. We were joking about that. And we were like, there's got to be some reason why they forced this so early on.
Right.
And maybe this is why. Maybe because they knew it was a partner challenge and there'd be an odd number.
Yeah, but then you just bump the episode later.
Maybe, but maybe like they couldn't get the permit to do this event on any other day.
I don't know. We're on the case. We'll let you know.
Okay, there is someone named the Bravo Historian on the internet. And I think that we need to reach out to her with this mystery. And you know what mystery we need her to solve.
Toilet halibut.
Toilet halibut. Okay. Bravo Historian or Bravo Investigator, please check your DMs if you listen.
So... yeah, let's talk about the pairings. Let's get into it. Who drew what? Nancy, walk us through it.
So first, as we said, we have Tristan, who's going to be partnered with the champion of Last Chance Kitchen, which we now know to be Bailey. This was really fun because Bailey is coming back into the competition with a new lease on life.
Yeah.
You can tell that she's brimming with excitement. She just wants to tell everyone, like, I'm different now.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be harder to beat. Yeah, I'm going to be harder to beat. So I just like the energy. And Tristan's such a nice guy. He was like, yeah, I'll work with you. That sounds great.
I love that he was like, she just looks like a new person. I love that. Yeah. The second I knew that was going to be the pairing, I was like, ooh, I like this.
Yes, yes. And so then let's talk about our Indian pair, Indian cuisine, excuse me. Neither of these people are of Indian descent. But we have Lana and Vinny. What did you think of this pairing?
I love this pairing. This has been like a fine wine. This duo gets better with age in terms of just their on-stream, like charisma, to your point.
Yeah.
I think that I was so happy to see Apple Bowl 2.0 grace the screen. And you did – it was cool. They're clearly extremely different in their approach, and we'll talk about that in terms of performance this season – or this episode since they were on the bottom. But I just – they have really complementary energies. They're both kind of sickos. Everybody in this season's kind of a sicko.
Yes.
Yeah.
In their own sicko little way.
I love it.
The Vinny Lana – you put it very well. They have very different approaches, but I think there's a ton of mutual respect.
Yeah.
And something that I really like about both Vinny and Lana, but I think I notice this particularly in Vinny because he has such a prestigious pedigree, is that regardless of that pedigree, he is very friendly and very open-minded to what other people bring to the table. Like, you don't see him saying, like, well, this is how we did it here. Although he did kind of do that this episode a little bit. But he's not like, I'm better than you because I worked at these places.
Yeah.
He is very open to working with different types of people. And so it's nice.
They were fun. This was fun. And it was kind of funny that, like, these were the two that ended up with Indian food, you know? Of every, like, they probably could have done better in any other of these options.
Yeah, they were pretty out of their depth, I would say.
Yeah. Okay, Portuguese. This one to me was, I honestly, if you had a gun to my head, I would not know what to tell you was Portuguese.
Same here.
This was Corwin and Kat. Thoughts on this dynamic?
I mean, this is going to be boring for the listeners because I'm just kind of jazzed by every single partnership here. But Kat and Corwin are cool because Kat has sort of established herself as not like a renegade by any means, but she does things her own way. Like, she has a really specific point of view, and I think she has a really specific approach to food, whereas Corwin has a bit more of like a fancy background, a bit more of a fine dining background, but he's not obnoxious about it either. And I think that I was excited, and I'm sure that they don't know much about Portuguese cuisine either, but they strike me as people who are really open-minded and excited to try new things. I mean, you saw Corwin getting like really hopped up on salt cod. So it was just fun to see them discovering and learning together and really trying. I think similarly to Lana and Vinny, like this cuisine kind of threw them for a loop.
Mm-hmm.
And they were just trying to find ways to relate to it and figure out ways to put themselves or to filter the challenge through a lens that they would understand.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. The one thought I did have on the Portuguese piece was that famously, the famous reference that jumps to mind is Mystic Pizza.
Of course, that's Portuguese cuisine.
Which I think we've talked about this before, but just really quickly, we'll stay on topic, I promise. But Nancy had like a complete spiral out the first time we watched Mystic Pizza and fully thought that it was going to be like this, like
tragedy.
Tragedy of like the place went up in flames. Like she made every wrong prediction when we watched this movie and just didn't think it was just like a soapy romance.
I was like, the pizza place burns down and they lose their business. Yeah, like 5 minutes in. 5 minutes in, I was like, oh, I bet the pizza place burns down. And then the mom who's sort of in charge of the pizza place, I was like, I bet she dies. And then there's like some girl who's having an affair with like a townie. And I was like, I bet they get found out by the wife. And like, nope, none of that happens. Just a movie about a pizza restaurant.
I will say, in your defense, I once thought that The Talented Mr. Ripley was a comedy. And I kept watching it and it kept getting worse and worse. And I was like, what is going on with this movie?
Oh my God.
It's that a psychological thriller.
That is a dark, dark thriller.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Okay,
it's actually not funny at all.
There's no humor. Like I didn't laugh out loud once during The Talented Mr. Ripley.
So, okay, back to the food.
Let's talk about laughing out loud. Okay? Massimo and Paula.
Oh man. Let's talk kind of like fantasy pairings after we go through these, but yes. I will say that I really would have died to have seen Massimo get Greek because I think that the energies are so aligned. Just to see Massimo deal with the like Greek papu and the, you know, guy in the kitchen, like, this is Greek. It's even in Greek. Like, just the most classic Greek people. It would have been like the final, you know, like Godzilla versus King Kong. I would have liked that moment. But anyways, this was a fun duo. No complaints. It maybe wasn't how do you call it? Like there were other ones that I was like, oh, zing. Like this is, this works. This works in a cool way. This one to me felt like, yeah, I don't think there's going to be any issues here, but I didn't think that they were going to like unlock something in each other.
Yes. But we did sort of have our we had some drama. I would say it's our first instance of like two contestants beefing.
Yeah, yeah.
Quite literally, excuse the pun. In a while on Top Chef. Like we haven't gotten this type
over
of
beef.
Confrontation in many seasons.
Yeah. And so, welcome. We welcome
yeah,
it.
I enjoyed it. Like I understand that I'm just like a disgusting garbage troll who likes reality TV, but it was kind of fun to get that injected into the episode. And like, it was good natured and they literally kissed and made up.
Yes. But
it was.
Kiss.
Look, gone are the days of the stolen pea puree. I think we just have to accept that that's never going to happen
again. I do love that he just turned and was like, I'm sorry if I was an asshole. And she was like, I mean, yeah, you were kind of rude. That was like the best. That's conflict in 2025.
Yes.
It can be done. And then you apologize and you move on.
Yeah, but not if you're a Real Housewife of Salt Lake City.
Nope.
Maybe we'll do a special bonus episode on Bits' thoughts on the Real Housewives of Salt Lake City.
When I get there, you know we will.
Okay, so another
they had Caribbean. Pairing. Did we say that? They had Caribbean.
Yes, they were the Caribbean team. Thank you. You're right. So
or is it
let's
Caribbean?
Talk about Caribbean or Caribbean. I think I say Caribbean.
I say Caribbean.
But I say Caribbean when I'm saying Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yes, that there's only one right way to say
the
that.
The cadence of that is much nicer than Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yeah, that might be like a yellow flag.
If someone says Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think the kids are calling it beige flags these days.
Oh, okay. That's a
beige
it's like, flag.
Not a problem, but of note.
Yeah. Keep an eye on. All right.
Okay. So the pair to me that stuck out the most of just like, I remember listening to the Office Rewatch podcast, and they were saying that what the writers would do would they would just be – they would have everyone – every character's name written on a postcard, and they just take two random postcards and put them together or Post-its and be like, what would happen if these two people were in a scene together, like as a thought experiment.
Oh, I love that.
And the pair to me that most exemplifies what are we going to get if we put these two people together, Katiana and Cesar.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was just like, oh my God, I love seeing these two people in a room together. I love seeing their minds work together.
Yeah.
And I'm really excited to see what they come up with.
I think that there's like a, not like seriousness to them, but they both have like work with a level of serenity.
Yes.
And, but it's a little different. You know, Cesar has like a levity to him. Katiana's is like a little bit more of a quiet intensity.
Yes.
But they are serene in the kitchen.
So well put.
And it was really fun. And honestly, dude, did you notice the height difference between them?
Yes. Cesar is a giant.
At judge's table, when she's like literally like cranes her neck up to the ceiling.
We need a height check on Cesar. If anyone can write us and tell us how tall he is, we would really appreciate that. Because it's also possible that she's just super short.
Could be both.
I mean, she does not give short energy at all. Mm-mm. But she could be. I've been told, people tell me that I'm a lot shorter than they expect.
It's hard for me to know at this point.
I will say that the thing that I realized in COVID was like, you can, by, you know, interacting with people virtually, you can tell someone's weight, age, general countenance. You can tell a lot about someone, but the one thing you genuinely cannot intuit from knowing someone just on Zoom is height.
Earth-shattering.
I got my shit rocked by some people in grad school for how tall and or short they were after a year of being on Zoom with them.
My shit.
You just blew my fucking mind.
I'm sorry. I got to sit down because you're tall.
Or you're short.
Or you're short.
Short.
I love that. I miss when that was like kind of like such a talking point when you met somebody.
Yeah, when you could just like, during COVID, when you would meet someone in person and you could just, it was socially acceptable to comment on their physical appearance in a way that like it is not socially acceptable to do.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, look at your bottom half. Look at you.
Exactly. Like, whoa. Or like when you saw someone without a mask for the first time, be like, whoa, that's what your face looks like?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so true. Okay, Mac.
We're swinging back. Okay, we've covered Cesar, Katiana. We've covered Lana.
And they had Thai. They had
Thai food.
Royal Thai.
Yes, high royal cuisine. And then finally, last but certainly not least, the Asian Sensation Redemption Tour.
Yes.
In their words, Henry and Shuai.
Excellent pairing.
Both on our fantasy team.
Oh my God, that's right.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
I feel like we're kind of crushing it.
Okay, so I thought that, and then I went into the Google Sheet. We are currently in last.
Okay.
But, last of three. But the scores for this week's episode have not been calculated.
Okay.
And we are the only remaining team with all five of our original starting players still in the game.
Yes. So just for listeners, if you haven't heard us mention, like if you're wondering what is this strange draft that we're talking about, we partnered with our friends on the LA Food Pod to do a Top Chef draft at the top of the season. And so we'll probably check in with them during the actual midpoint of the season to see how things are going. So we'll, you know, invite them on or we'll head over there. But yes, we'll keep you posted. But as of now, we have all of our chefs on our team.
Yes, and our team consists of Lana, Henry, Bailey, Shuai, and Paula.
Fuck, we're stacked.
We've got all of our players in the game right now.
Okay, nice. But the thing is, like, everybody that you didn't just list is also great. So we'll see.
Fuck. I know there are some really heavy hitters on other teams.
There is. And this is why we don't do drafts, because Why choose?
I mean, you heard about my Mystic Pizza predictions.
Yeah.
You think I can predict a good Top Chef team? Are you kidding me? Real world data?
Get out
no,
of
thank
here.
You. Okay. We are really digressing. So Henry and Shuai got Filipino food. Now, I don't want to make a sweeping generalization, but to me, it was so fitting that they got like the swaggiest chef to work with.
Yeah, like, that chef was swag.
He was so swaggy. And I kind of feel like any other ones of these pairings, they maybe would have been like a little more buttoned up, and like the chemistry between them wouldn't have been as good.
Yeah.
But I just think that Shuai and Henry have a casual effervescence about them that they were kicking it with that chef. And when he showed up to their table in that bucket hat, I was like, oh, these guys are friends now.
Yeah. I like that when he makes a comment like, well, he didn't spit it out. Let's talk about the food
a bit. Let's talk about the food now. We've opined.
I'm going to just kind of like pick what – something that jumped out to me as looking very, very, very delicious. The grilled octopus.
Oh.
I am sorry I'm starting with like the winner, but it really was awesome. I am famously Greek, if you didn't know that about me. So I really liked it.
That's all we got. Okay. So this was a grilled octopus dish.
Octopus.
Say octopus dish 10 times fast.
Octopus dish. Octopus dish. No, I'm
octopus
not.
Dish. Okay,
octopus
anyway.
Dish. You can't.
We had a grilled octopus with a green Kalamata relish and a Kalamata caramel glaze.
Whoa. How'd you do that? Hey, how'd you make that?
So it was cool seeing it look sort of like a yakitori grill almost that they were cooking over. But they kept saying kissed by fire. Like they were really into the whole like Greek food being grilled theme. Yeah, kissed by a rose.
It looked delicious. It, I think it was really brave. The caramel piece to me feels so interesting. Caramel and olive honey relish, they hit all the highlights of Greece. Honey, olive, octopus, and
it was also
the Kalamata olive,
brave because it really had like no major accoutrement. Like it was the grilled octopus on a skewer.
That's Greek
what you
food.
Were
and I think that that's exactly. also what worked so well in their favor. I also feel like I famously hold the opinion that it's very difficult to elevate Greek food.
Yes.
And not to jump into the Portuguese, but if we may, the thing that the chef at the Portuguese restaurant said was that Portuguese cuisine is simple. It's a simplicity for everyday eating. And that's what I've always kind of thought about Greek food. It's like, it's food you get in a taverna. It's good, well-grilled meat. It's fresh vegetable. But I was proven wrong this episode. In probably more the Greek side than the Portuguese side. I actually think that the Portuguese side, they sort of kept with the simplicity to their detriment. What'd you think of seeing our first croquette of the season?
Oh my God. I was hoping you'd mention it. I mean, look, large format challenge. We're getting a croquette. This is top croquette.
Yep.
So you notice that scallops have really fallen off.
Yeah, where are my scallops at?
Front but yeah, back. So it was a delight to, you know, get the reference back to last season with Croquette Fest. For those wondering, we are talking about the Portuguese team. They made a cod and shrimp fritter, saffron aioli with pickles. They were really, really hoping to get salt cod, which is an integral ingredient in Portuguese cuisine. But alas, Whole Foods in Toronto did not have salt cod. So they had to really quickly pivot. The feedback on this was that the texture was off. It was a bit too wet. And I think they felt the dish was underwhelming. The judges did. Did you feel like Tom was sort of just like blasé about everything this episode? Everything was like, yeah, it's a good dish.
Yeah, there wasn't anything. I didn't see like a gleam in his eye.
Yeah, but I will say that I think he's just readjusted his setting. Like the spread in this group
yeah.
is razor thin.
The bar is high, and I think he, yeah, he's a robot recalibrating.
Yeah, because I think he's like, yeah, it's a good dish because that's now just like the baseline of what these guys are creating.
Yeah.
And it's really rare that this early in the season, you're just like, wow, everything was good.
Well, let's back up and talk about the sort of drama that befell Kat and Corwin, which is that they couldn't find saltfish at Whole Foods. I'm playing it back in my head. I'm wondering if there was an opportunity for a bigger pivot in that moment.
Yes.
Like whether it was the right thing to kind of like iterate or whether it would have been better to sort of just reimagine the vision.
Mm-hmm.
I've never had saltfish. Have you had saltfish?
I don't think so. Maybe it's like a garnish on something.
Yeah.
But I don't think I've ever had it as like a main protein.
Yeah. So it's hard to know. This kind of like trade-off was difficult for me to kind of understand the scale of because of that. Like I wasn't like, oh, okay, well, like, what's one fish to the other? So we'll have to – maybe that's a leftover for us, but
Eat some saltfish. We can try to figure that out. Our leftover is to go find saltfish in New York City.
Eat it.
I think we can do it. But let's talk about – so we've spoken about the Greek team. We've spoken about the Portuguese team. We kind of talked about the Filipino team with the chef showing up. So this is like the homiest of chefs showing up, rocking up in his bucket hat and like silly clear sunglasses. I say silly in an admirational way.
Mm-hmm.
But so they made an arroz caldo with roast pork and a kare-kare sauce. This looked almost like porridge.
Yeah, well, they were saying that it was inspired by congee.
Oh, I must have missed that detail.
Yeah, yeah, that was a big moment. Oh. So what's wrong with you?
I guess I just, you know, really messed up on that one. They were talking about rice, cooking rice as a way of life. Yes, you know what? Yeah. It's coming back to me. Yes, you're so right. But the feedback from the judges was that the meat was a little dry, but the flavors were really well done, particularly the sour notes of the dish. I am not super familiar with Filipino food, are you?
No.
I like to think of myself as a pretty adventurous eater, but this episode made me realize, like, I don't know much about Portuguese food. I don't know much about Filipino food.
Yeah.
I guess I kind of know about the other ones by nature of living in New York City.
Right, right.
You know, we are on the tail end of a Thai renaissance in New York City. We have had over the past few years just some incredible Thai restaurants open up. Som Thai, I believe, is the type of regional cuisine we've become accustomed to here in the great city of New York. But let's talk about Cesar and Katiana's Thai high royal cuisine dish.
So before we get into that, I took the liberty of I wanted to understand why they were really harping on the royal Thai.
Mm-hmm.
So I looked it up. It's essentially just what it sounds like. It's a refined version of mainstream Thai food. The main differences come into play with the quality of the ingredients. So it's the highest quality ingredients, the preparation and the presentation. So it mm-hmm. being like a little bit more elaborate. I know Kristen kind of had that like little side comment about like, oh, this like, you know, decorative punch of Katiana's is really like paying off. But I think it worked well here because that's exactly what this is. It's a little more decorative and elaborate in the way that it's plated. So, but other than that, it's not materially, it's like fancy French food versus French food. I don't know. I guess every cuisine has it.
Well, something of note in this dish, we had a pad Thai glazed tenderloin, pickled mushrooms, pickled daikon with a peanut crumble added to the counter. It's crumble o'clock. Now we have one
Let's
crumble
get
this
ready
episode.
To crumble.
This season is Top Chef season 22, Destination Canada. Let's get ready to crumble. That's the full title of this season.
Say it with your chest.
Well, I'll say that we are up to 5 crumbles this season.
Good lord. I hope they have a challenge that's like make an apple crumble. You know, like just meet it head on.
Yes. Yes. But so this dish sounded really fucking good. Excuse my language. I would have
just really enjoyed this.
And it was, it met the inspiration came through. Yes. In a similar fashion to Bailey and Tristan's on the Greek mm-hmm. side. So that's great.
Yeah. So that's great.
And in that way, they were good.
It should be of note that Katiana and Cesar were in the top teams along with Tristan and Bailey. So it was nice to see them get their flowers for this.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about the Indian team, Lana and Vinny. Mm-hmm. Lana and Vinny made a chicken with Indian spiced hollandaise, which was taken from an inspiration of Kama Sutra chicken or Kama Sutra sauce. Yes.
Chicken Kama
like
Sutra.
Chicken Kama Sutra. Sorry. Yes. Like the book. Thank you, Vinny.
Title of ep.
Like the book. And it was also an inspiration from a dish that Vinny famously made when he worked at The Nomad, which he could not have said more times
ever
this episode.
Ever heard of it?
I actually immediately take back the thing I said at the top of the episode of like, he doesn't really rub it in your face.
No, you can't.
I'm an adult. I can change my mind. So we get it. He worked at The Nomad and he made a chicken and hollandaise sauce dish there.
I'm going to be honest. I actually don't like the thought of chicken and hollandaise at all. I think that's like actually sounds gross to me.
Completely agree.
Yeah.
And I think that I similarly found it difficult to visualize this dish as he was describing it. The way Lana was like, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. It seems like kind of crazy to kind of take a cuisine that is known for its sauces and then use a different cuisine's sauce.
Yes.
It's like just use all the sauces they have.
Yes. 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 I mean, I wonder if this is a function of like the chef they got as their mentor who was so sweet, who greeted them with flowers.
Oh, with flowers.
Like his energy was so fun. They got their flowers. But he clearly spent the entire time teaching them how to make one dish. It wasn't a stage so much as like a tutorial.
Mm-hmm.
And both of them said that they were not familiar with Indian cuisine at all. So with their limited knowledge of Indian cuisine and this like couple hours of observation that they had, I think that this dish was really their only point of reference. And I think that they sort of fell prey to something that Katiana and Cesar did really well, which is like, how do we take inspiration from this and make something net new? They were struggling with this idea of like, how do we avoid just recreating this dish? And I think that was where they struggled. Like I think I bet they didn't make any comments about if the protein was well cooked or if the sauce was well constructed. Like I think all of the technical parts were there and
yeah.
They made a flatbread. They made a naan that I'm sure was delicious. But I think it was just they struggled with how to elevate from the inspiration.
Yeah. Yeah.
As opposed to recreate.
Yes. Yeah. And it almost sometimes when it feels like too obvious, it's even more difficult. Like you sort of want to what do you call it? I'm blanking on the like expression I'm looking for, but like you want to avoid just picking the obvious route on how to elevate Indian food, and so you sort of just like over-engineered it.
By the way, huge news. I don't know if you've been paying attention to this, but Dishoom, the incredible Indian restaurant in London, which I know is really basic. Yeah, you went to London, you go to Dishoom.
It's
delicious.
And I did.
Don't at me. It's coming to New York in 2026.
I know. That's amazing.
I'm so excited. I have been lobbying for this via my Instagram for a long time. I think they finally heard me. And I just cannot wait. But I think the way that we've had a Thai renaissance in New York City, I am seated for the Indian renaissance in New York City. I am ready. And we've gotten a little. The first Indian restaurant to ever receive a Michelin star, Sema, is in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that we are ready to have our baseline of Indian food increased here.
I'm ready. I'm ready for whatever.
Indian food in New York is terrible.
Food
shitty Thai food is good.
And wipes out all the small plate shit in New York.
Save it for your judgy table.
I'm saving it.
Okay. We've got thoughts. Okay. We are just moving, not moving along, but let's talk about our Caribbean team, our Caribbean team. So we have Massimo and Paula, who, as we alluded to, got into a bit of a tiff because Paula was very confident in the timing of her meat. She was cooking. She really had a good sense of like, no, it needs to go longer and it's due. And Massimo was freaking out. He's like, this has to reduce. And he yanks it off the stove. Very dramatic.
So who is right? Because I ended up, I got a little lost in the literal sauce on this one. The meat ends up a little dry for the judges. So who was in the wrong here?
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting point. I think that objectively, Massimo was in the wrong in that he took essentially Paula's work and like interfered.
Yeah.
In a way that was not collaborative and was not in the best interest. It was
but
it, not
But
teamwork.
Did that lead to the dry meat? Or
I don't know if taking the jus out led to the dry meat or leaving it on. Like, I don't know braising well enough. So maybe we have to ask an expert about that. But what I will say is I think in terms of sportsmanship and collaboration, Massimo did not act in a manner befitting a teammate.
Yes, yes. But hey.
But I also think they fixed it pretty quickly.
It was fun.
And got over it. And it was fun. I liked watching it.
It was fun. It was fun and exciting.
Yeah. Noted by the fact that it was like the one thing they kept showing in all the previews for this episode. So like they knew it would draw people in.
Right. They knew they got like double their viewership this week.
Yeah, they got like 2 seconds of drama and we're just seated. Ready to
yum,
go.
Yum, 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 yum.
Okay, so those are all of our dishes. On the top, as we said, we had the Greek team and the Thai team, with the Greek team taking home the victory.
Taking the dub.
Double elimination 2 weeks in a row.
Double
immunity.
Double immunity. But no Chase Quickfire Quick Cash.
No Chase Quickfire Quick Cash. but say, I mean, that's incredible that they have immunity again next episode.
Again. No again. Chase Fire Quick Cash for the octopus.
Chase Fire octopus. Quick Cash for your Cypriot. I don't know. Okay.
But this sucks. The bottom this week sucked.
Sucked. Talk about
it. I hate it. Let's talk about it. So we had Lana and Vinny. We had Kat and Corwin. We've sort of hit on all the negative feedback here. I'm going to be honest. I was kind of surprised that Massimo and Paula weren't on the bottom just on the dry of the meat. But I'm also this is how the season is going to be. Everybody's really good. So when people leave, it's going to be like, damn it.
We've got a lot of all-stars in this season. I feel it.
Yeah.
Yes, it was tough. Unfortunately, Kat and Corwin get sent home, which we hate to see.
Really hate that, yeah.
But I have to ask you the eternal question, Bits. Would you eat that?
I don't like croquettes.
They're not my favorite, but like they're fried, so I'd probably eat it.
Okay.
You know, anything deep fried at the end of the day can only be so good or so bad, so I'd probably eat it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that's where we are.
Amen, but brother.
Let's do judgy table. I will preface this judgy table by saying Bits and I had dinner last night together at a restaurant that will remain unnamed in New York City.
But can – well, maybe it's going to – okay, let's keep going. Yeah.
I don't know. I was going to say I get the sense because I know my judgy table is sort of an inspiration from that dinner. I get the sense that yours is too.
Yes. I'll let you go first because mine is going to be real – I have
you're
enough
ready?
Fodder
okay.
that I want to let you say your piece and I will find space in the narrative.
Mine, I don't think you're expecting what I'm about to say.
Okay. Let her rip.
Mine is just something that, I got inspiration from last night's dinner to say.
Beautiful.
And I feel that I am brave enough to say the following. Nancy, your judgy table starts now. I'm done with tinned fish. It's time for tinned fish to be out of the zeitgeist. Approximately 3 years ago, a little company called Fishwife did some well-branded canned salmon, and all the apartment chef girlies are goo-goo gaga for slimy fish in tins that, after you take their well-branded packaging off, are the same as your bumblebee tuna, my guy. I am not – I think we all just need to collectively admit that, like, they're yucky and slimy and weird, and I think people really like to show off that they're like, oh, I'm sophisticated. I eat tinned sardines with a bite of cheese for dinner, and I have an incredibly refined palate. No, it's weird and it's gross, and I don't like anchovies, and I don't like sardines, and I don't think it's a – it does not a meal make, and I am not interested in weird, slimy fishes. However, that said, Calippo tuna fish, till the day I die, I will spend all of my money on you. But that's tuna different. Fish is – canned tuna fish has been done. Like, it be doing its thing for years.
And it's perfected
It's perfected the formula. Like, we can take canned tuna fish out of the tinned fish variety.
Take it out.
I'm done with it. Let's move on. No one likes it.
Nobody likes it. Everybody hates it. It's going to eat a worm.
Yeah.
Yeah, 100%. You know, I made a Caesar salad the other night, used some anchovies. I do like it there.
That's fine. That's fine. I'm talking, like, about tinned fish on, like, a charcuterie board.
Yes, 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 yes. Or, like, tinned fish like we had last night on, yes, like, a little piece of bread. Okay.
Yeah, yeah, I didn't like that sandwich.
I didn't like that.
It was weird and funky. Not in a good way.
It was not my thing.
Not my thing. Anyway, bits. I'm salivating for your judge's table, your judgy table, which starts now.
Any restaurant that requires me to eat after I eat at the restaurant. If I have to get a slice of pizza after eating a dinner at a restaurant, you're not a restaurant. You're a bar with some light bites. So I don't know what else to say on that except for, I'm coming for small plates. You're dead to me. And if I'm paying $80 for a meal in New York, I'm expecting to be rolled out of there. No, I'm being dramatic. But at the same time, it's like, come on. Yes, that's a very pretty plate of food. Thank you. Like, where's the – can I order a side of rice or potatoes or bread?
Something to substantiate this meal.
Yes.
I am tired of small plates. First, like – I'm tired of the description of, like, we recommend 2 to 3 per person. Like, have you dined with us before? Well, we're a small plates concept. We get it. It's just less food.
Right, right, yes. Maybe if you, like, made those plates bigger for everybody.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Adjust it for the size of the group. There's economics to this,
but – oh, man.
Small plates, it's also – it's gotten out of hand. We're just getting small portions. And don't look at me dead in the eye and ask, is that enough? Say yes, knowing full well that the piece of bronzino I'm about to get is enough for a 3-year-old. There are five people at this table. You want me to split 2 ounces of bronzino in a broth?
Yes.
You didn't even give me a fucking spoon to eat it with.
Yeah, that was maybe the most comical share. Ironically, like, there was a lot. There was a lot to choose from, but that one to me really is notable on the share spectrum.
We're done with small plates. We're done with tin fish. It's time for just good old-fashioned order what you want to eat.
Good old-fashioned serving size.
Yes. Give me a dinner plate. Super size me. Give me a dinner plate.
Oh, man. Wow. Well,
glad we got that for chess.
I'm feeling 10 pounds lighter and still hungry.
And still hungry. I'm going to go get a slice of pizza. And right after that, you can listen to our next week's episode of Compliments to the Chef. We'll be back, hopefully better fed next week.
You know it. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.